feel like I can go any faster than I'm going.
Right.
And then this interesting thing happened. At 13 miles, exactly halfway, the course looped back on itself. So I'm running in one direction. The runners ahead of me have made the turn, and they are coming back in the opposite direction. So we're passing each other. And so I get to see all the runners who are in the lead, who are way up, probably, you know, quarter, half a mile ahead of me.
And how many are they? Are those 20 or 10 or?
Oh, you know, I was probably in about 40th place.
Yeah.
So the first thing that I realize is, number one, I'm really, really way too far behind. I'm not going to win a gold medal or a medal. And the second thing is that the first runner that comes by is Fatuma Rova from Ethiopia, and she's winning it. And she's striding out in this beautiful, fluid, free stride. Now, the interesting thing was, when I started running 28 years ago, African woman didn't run. Third world country woman didn't run. Woman didn't run marathons when I started.
Mm.
So I'm looking at her and I'm going, here's this African woman coming out and she's going to win the race. And I said to myself, she is so beautiful. She reminds me of when I started and I just had this incredible fluid, free stride and, you know, just she embodied just such joy in running. And it was the first time in a race that I'd ever taken pause to admire somebody else. Then behind her came the Russian woman, Valentina Yegorova. So she was the one who had won in Barcelona 4 years before, and here she is trying for her second medal. And she's in second place, and the Japanese runner, Yuko Aramori, who'd won the silver 4 years before, and the East German runner, Catherine Dory, and you know, they're pumping it out, and they're mind over matter, and they're so focused, and I looked at them, and each runner that I saw come by was like looking at myself at a stage of my career, and I watched them. And I realized they were running so hard to get a medal. And here I was, I already had one. And I hadn't appreciated it. I had not given myself credit for these incredible things that I had done over so many years, because I hadn't felt happy. I hadn't felt happy with myself, and I wasn't fulfilled. And in that moment, I realized that what I'd done was pretty incredible, and that I already had a medal, and that I was going to finish, and I was going to be an Olympic medalist, and that was it, and my career was over. And it was quite an epiphany. And when I finished, I remember saying to my husband, I said, you know, I was thinking that I was so convinced I was going to get the gold medal. And yet, when I talked to Zeus, I didn't ask for the gold medal, I just asked for the gold. And I got it in a way that was different from how I thought I was going to get it. So I could retire, and I'm really happy. I didn't retire feeling empty or unfulfilled. I had it all, and I really believe that that was the time where my bronze medal became a gold medal.
Yeah, it's a Leonard Cohen song. Leonard Cohen song. Let me tell you my story before I turn to gold.
Yes.
That's good.
Yeah. Anyway.
So what position did you get?
Oh, I think 43rd, something like that.
No, 42, the answer to the universe. You probably came 42.
42. I probably came 42nd. You know, that is it, yes.
You know, the hitchhiker's guide.
You're with And I think that's where you were with Ion, too, because that's where J.W. is, right?
J.W. would have been, he had the front row seat at that place.
Yeah,
there
he was
go.
Probably, yeah, he was probably from the future exerting his influence on me.
Right. Now,
yeah.
What did you do when you crossed the line? Did you go and talk to the winners and hang out?
Sure, yeah, yeah. Yeah, you always do that. It's part of being a good sport.
Did you keep your ideas to yourself?
No, I wrote them all in a book.
Oh, that's right. but on that day, you how were you walking around talking? Were you going from your epiphany?
Yes, I was. In fact, I had an interview with, I can't remember his name, from the New York Times. And he wrote a story about me. Pretty much based on just what I've told you, not as
right.
much detail. But I suppose it's sort of like, it wasn't like trying to make lemonade out of lemons. It really was a lot more than that. It was quite an extraordinary event. Well, or have recreated it to be an extraordinary event. But, it was...
So you hadn't finished in 92. You ran four more years because you hadn't stopped the race.
I ran four more years because I wasn't happy with being bronze. I didn't like third. Third for me was a failure.
Right.
I had to rewrite that script. That's what my other 4 years was about.
And it had a different conclusion.
Yeah. So there you go.
Well, that's great to get. Great to get that story in our recording here.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you, Lorraine.
It's been pretty incredible. So you know, that's what I am. I'm in Zeus's service now as an Olympian. And I attempt to live by the Olympic ordeals.
Yeah.
Ideals can be ordeals sometimes.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, we're all just bozos on the big bus, aren't we?
Fire Science Theater, 1971.
You know, and it's interesting how she trained with Arthur Lydiard and is carrying on his name to this day. And you, if you want to tell them about the Lydiard Foundation and what you're doing with that, but, you know, his
training
with his
name?
Athletes was...
Who's Arthur Lydiard?
So Arthur Lydiard was probably the most influential endurance coach of the modern era. He died in 2004 at the age of 87 while he was on tour. He'd given a talk to a sellout crowd of about 500 people in Texas, in Houston, Texas, and died... after the event. And I was very much influenced by his methods, it's basically a training method of how to get the most from the body in endurance training and to peak, how to peak for an event. So there's a big timing factor in there. So the whole idea is that you train so that when you reach the event of your choice, that you can take a quantum leap in performance, and that is by tailoring your training in a particular way, which he popularized.
Did you ever run a game?
I just jogged, Bob.
You don't race it. You stopped racing in 96.
Yeah, I stopped racing. I had no desire to do it. That competitiveness was just not there in the same degree that it was.
Right.
That drive was satisfied. It was done. And my job now is to coach coaches in this particular method. So we run training courses and teach people how to train so that they can coach others in this particular methodology, which is really just a fabulous and safe, and I think it's that training system that gave me the longevity and such a good start. So,
when did you start teaching there?
We've been doing it for about 5 years.
Mm.
We've been developing the courses. I have a Japanese business partner, so he lived with Arthur Lydiard when he was younger, to learn the training methods from him, and together we have together this foundation. If people want to find out more, it's thelydiardfoundation.org, and you know, it's just a really good system. If you're going to spend time doing endurance training and you want to reach a peak performance, then this is the way to do it.
And it's interesting, Lorraine, I wanted to elaborate with this, but the U.S., you know how we tend to beat our bodies up and run to the ground and we don't put out phenomenal athletes, and Arthur Lydiard wasn't one of these coaches that was well known in the whole world, but he put out these Olympians left and right by teaching the athletes the love of the body.
Yeah, it's all
the
timing.
It.
Yeah, and you know, when you're doing training, I mean, yes, sorry?
Carolyn? Spell the name. I want people to
answer
the right spelling. Spell the name, he says. Arthur Lydiard. Your org site.
Okay, Lydiard Foundation.
Out?
Yeah, lydiardfoundation.org.
L-Y.
Yeah, why don't you, in your American accent, people will understand you better.
L-Y-D-I-A-R-D. Foundation, FOUNDATION .org, right?
Yes.
LydiardFoundation.org.
Yeah. Hey, thanks, you guys. That's great. Yeah. So I have.
Did he ever win anything?
No. He used himself as a guinea pig. But you know what he did? It was in the 60s. He had gathered together the neighborhood young men. And he trained them up to be Olympians, and all of them did hugely successful. And this was against the Eastern Europeans who had gone to the, you know, kindergartens and hand picked out the kids
right.
with the right size feet and all the growth potential. Yeah, and you know, here's this guy from New Zealand with just these neighborhood kids and a lot of heart and focus and a good sound training program, and they came out at the 1960 Olympics, and he produced two gold medalists in the space of an hour.
Wow.
Beating all these Eastern Bloc guys. And so his adage was that champions are everywhere, you just have to train them correctly. But it was more than the training, though, was, you know, more than just the physical training. He was an incredible motivator, and he had them believing in what they could do, and he was just a particularly charismatic kind of guy, a little bit like you, Bob.
Yes, I can feel it. I'm setting a new institute here.
Yes.
So
the RNA drop.
Yes, chaos. You know what it is? It is the part fascist, part communist, a little bit of monarchism in my Marxism, and anarchist with a healthy passion of order institute.
I love it.
Quadrophenia.
Yeah.
Which is what's been going on for the last 3 days. All that stuff, all over the place. And you've brought in a very sobering LaRouche quadrant, linear, purposeful, and that quadrant's called God. On the chart. So you brought in the divinity aspect, and it's the kinetic bias, it's the kinetic sense, which is the American bias.
Yep. So you know,
I'm interested in what happened after the race. So you hang out, and how many days do you stay there in Atlanta?
Well, you stay till the closing of the games.
Oh yeah.
And then everybody goes home. So it's over a 10-day period.
And you run into the stadium, because you have to realize JW owns Georgia. He would have been at the mayor's seat or whatever it is, the most prominent, you know, perfect view. So you would have run by him.
I would have.
So cool.
Yeah.
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 You ran
by
Ion.
I did.
And when did the bomb happen? Before or after?
Oh, yeah, it was in the square. It killed one person.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I thought about, yeah, with the whole Boston thing this year.
That's right, yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah, very interesting.
Where you were supposed to be.
I was definitely after our race. It was sometime in the middle of the game.
Yeah. Right, your race is early.
Yeah, we were the first Saturday, and the games close on the a week later on a Saturday. So they start.
So we can say when you come up close near Ion, which you did earlier this year through us,
mm-hmm.
and back then in '96, a bomb will blow up. That's the pattern here.
Oh well, thank you.
You drama queen. Whenever you get near Ion, you want to get attention, so you fucking get a bomb to go off.
Yeah, yeah, well, it's nothing to do with me, you know. Anybody who's listening, nothing to do with me.
Yeah, oh, yeah,
I'm not into bombs. I don't mind breaking down old paradigms, but, you know, I'm not into blowing people up, yeah.
Well, that's a pretty incredible story, and I suppose it's all detailed in the book, right?
It's all in the book, Bob.
So when you took your clothes off,
it now.
What?
Yes.
I have a copy of the book.
I wondered when you were going to get to this part.
I'm going to go up and get the book and read that part. I want to read the clothing part into the record.
Yeah, yeah. Bob, there's no pictures. Sorry.
I can be do have whatever I want. There's going to be pictures in mine.
Okay. Oh yeah, you go for it.
Yeah. So when you're there, what kind of body gestures did you make as sort of your attempt to be ritualistic?
I stood on the rock.
Yeah.
And I had my arms in the air.
Like a V?
Yeah, like I had my arms
like the victory pose.
Like the victory pose. Yeah.
Right.
It's my favorite pose. I love practicing the victory pose. I always like, you know, that's why when I would run up the hill and I would imagine I was in the Olympic Stadium, I'd always throw my arms up in the air.
Now, do you teach people to, that's like kind of a visualization, do you teach people to act out the victory?
Yes.
Right.
I tell people if they want to get good running form to put their arms up in the air as if they're crossing the finish line.
Right.
So when you cross the finish line with a photo finish, they measure it from the chest. So you want to have your chest forward.
Yeah.
Okay, it's not the head. So you want to cross with the heart. So you have the heart into it. You put your arms in the air. It's a gesture of power. It's being in our own personal power. That's why I love sports. I love running because you're exercising your own power to move energy.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I see in the book 1992-93, three weddings and a funeral, so we know what that is. And then 1994, last call. What would that refer to? That's the decision to go to 96?
1992, yeah.
No, in the last call chapter, 1994.
Last call. Yep.
Yeah, that's about your decision to go to 96.
Yes.
So, let's see.
It's Mercury. Mercury would call in, and he'd say, okay, you got another round. You got to go do another round. You're not done.
So I stood down, stripped naked, and climbed back on the rock, mustering all my courage. And holding my arms high, I beseech Zeus. So you say, oh, Zeus, great and glorious father of the Olympians, I, a mere sub-genius with the greatest of humility, come to seek your audience. I, a mere mortal with the greatest of humility, come to seek your audience. I have journeyed far to deliver this, my plea and my wish. I ask for your assistance in my bid to win the gold in the women's marathon in Atlanta on July 28, 1996. For this I pledge to you my service and promise in every way to make myself worthy of being an Olympian. I will conduct myself with truth, honor, and valor, and with love in my heart, not just in competition, but as a way of life. Please grant my plea. I give you this gift as a symbol of my wish and of my sincerity. I remain your most humble servant always, Lorraine Mary Moeller. I held up a gold medal made from wood and paint. It had my winning photo upon it. What's that mean, winning photo?
It had a photo of me winning. I'd taken it from another race, and I plastered it on my medal.
Right. It's not third place photo. It's a winning photo.
Yeah.
Yeah. It had my winning photo upon it, and the back was inscribed with the place, time, and date of the Olympic marathon. Using a stick in my fingers to scoop a hole in the cold, wet earth under my rock pedestal, I buried my token under a pile of stones. Then I bowed to the mountain. My job was done. I left my clothes and walked down the hill nude. I walked into the town. And I walked into the town and I thought of Lady. Who's the famous lady in the 12th century? Yeah, I thought of. I started channeling Lady Godiva, and I released a video right there in the middle of the commercial square.
Yeah, and it became a bestseller, and I retired.
Yeah, I held a press conference, announced everybody to buy my video, and headed to the local bar, and I never looked back.
Yeah, never read again.
So that was the original version, but you fucking mother edited it, and this is what your mother made you say. I put on my clothes, and I proceeded down the trail. I had gone but a short way when it occurred to me that I could well have been just a crackpot waving her arms on top of a boulder in her birthday suit, and that Zeus was no more than a flicker of my imagination. I agree. I do everything twice. You must do everything twice. Significant things. The thought stopped me in my tracks, and I turned back to face the spot where I'd been. Then in italics it says, "Please." So you didn't go back up. You did it right there. Well, how far away are you from it?
Well, I'd only run 100 meters down. Yeah, and I turned
right
around.
Okay, right. Yeah. Please, great Father, I have to know if you have heard me. Give me a sign. Give me a sign. From above, I heard. I don't believe this. This is fucking. You made this part up. From above, I heard a deep rumble that echoed through the clear blue sky. Boom! It sounded like a jet plane cracking the sound barrier. I jumped. Goosebumps danced all over my body. What was that? I gasped. And on cue, it happened again, this time unmistakably. A second great roll of thunder, louder than the first. Boom! Wow, that's amazing. Thank you, thank you, thank you, I cried out, clapping and dancing as tears of appreciation welled up in my eyes. Zeus had answered me, and now I knew that magic was real. I flew down the mountain, my adrenaline pumping, my mind racing, pausing only to gather every piece of rubbish I came across. The least I could do as a servant to Zeus and for my ignorant fellow mortals. Oh, look at the superiority attitude there. That's a little bit of an error there.
Hey, come on.
And my ignorant fellow mortals. The next morning, as I'm sitting in a... There, you did go to the village cafe. The next morning, I was sitting in a village cafe having breakfast. A little elderly woman entered and made a beeline for my table. She looked as if she belonged in a fairy tale, for she was wearing a long peasant skirt encircled by an apron, a black cotton scarf covering her head, and on her arm was a basket containing jars of clear golden honey. I knew this was no ordinary honey. This was nectar from the gods, Olympic gold. Mercury had sent her to deliver this to me. I bought a jar and put it in my bag. Then I thought better of it and turned to buy a second jar, but she had vanished from sight. That's right. You got to do everything twice. But And buy a second jar, but she had vanished from sight. And dot, dot, dot. The rest is for you to read, you out there to buy the book and find out what happens. So, okay, so you got 96 to 99 deaths. Someone actually die, or is that your death?
Her husband. It was me.
No, the ex-husband died in 92, Carolyn.
Okay.
It was her, yourself.
It was me.
Right.
Yeah.
Have you got a date there? Let's see if there's any date for your death. No?
No, I died as an athlete.
No, I know what you mean. I'm just looking to see if you put a date in. No, you didn't. Now, this the Kenyan who won, did she go on to win again, or are they just a one-time thing? It's so competitive.
She was an Ethiopian, yeah.
Yeah, Ethiopian. Did she win again?
No, she didn't. She won in 96. In 2000, the Japanese runner won.
So you were the Japanese, the German, and the... Ethiopian,
Russian.
And you were the four from, well, three. You were they were your competitors in 92.
Not the Ethiopian. This was, I hadn't competed against her before.
Oh, okay. But
the
other one.
New breed coming up, yeah.
Right, the other one, it was the second medal. So you got to watch, and they were in the same positions pretty well again. Second, third, and first with the Ethiopian who you didn't know, hadn't seen before. So what would that Ethiopian be doing today?
I don't know. A lot of them go back to their country and then do some kind of social work.
Yeah.
Put the money that they've earned into doing something to help their fellow countrymen.
I mean, they do professional racing for a while.
Yeah.
I see.
And, for them, the money that they earn is really big money when they bring it back home.
Right.
And a lot of them go into doing great works of service.
And they get forests named after them.
Probably. It wasn't a forest that was named after me. It was a park. It was actually a farm. It's a really beautiful piece of land in my hometown of Patararu.
Right, we talked about that. The hotel thing.
The hotel thing.
Remember the protest of the water system or something?
Oh, yeah. It's a place with a very beautiful spring. And,
yeah, when we were talking to you a few months ago, I was trying to remember the Canadian athlete that I knew of, and I remembered it the other day, Bruce Kidd. Do you remember that name?
Yes.
He was the star in our day when we paid attention to these things.
Actually, I saw him on a plane a few years ago, where he'd come over for an honour for one of the New Zealand athletes. It might have been, I'm not sure if it was Don Walker or... Anyway, he came over to give tribute.
Is he recognized as a great coach or something?
No, he's a university professor.
Yeah.
And who has a history as a great athlete and a very... educated man.
Right, so have you spoken to him?
Yeah, I spoke to him. Yeah, we were on the same plane coming back to the States.
Right, I'm looking up.
Yeah, very nice man.
Did he win a gold medal? What did he do? He's age 70.
No, he was the same era as Peter Snell.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so Peter Snell was Arthur Lydiard's protege who won the gold medal. As a 23-year-old, he won the gold medal in the 800 meters. And
right.
Beat all the Eastern Europeans and, you know.
So he came out of that neighborhood.
Yeah, he came out of that neighborhood. And Bruce Kidd was one who trained on a probably much more heavily interval trained, whereas the Lydiard system was different again, so... In Northern America, the popular training system was to do a lot of intervals, like go to the track and do 400 meters as hard as you can over and over and over again and get into a highly anaerobic state.
Right.
Lydiard popularized a different method, which was, first of all, you get your whole aerobic system trained first before you do any of those harder workouts, because you want to have your recovery system as highly developed as you can before you do the harder training. The first part of the training is to train yourself to train. You understand
right.
what I mean?
Yes. Yeah.
Those two systems. So, in the US, people typically do a lot of interval training before they've done the hard anaerobic training, and it's particularly hard on college athletes. So they do a lot of racing and a lot of hard training, but the body doesn't have the recovery systems maximized first.
Right.
They often come out of the system burned out. And so that's how Lydiard's system is different. It's a system built for longevity.
So it says here Bruce Kidd, he won 18 national senior championships in Canada, the United States, and Britain. He won a gold at the 62 British Empire and Commonwealth Games and was a member of the Canadian 64 Olympics, competing in the 5,000 meters, the 10,000 meters, and scheduled to start in the men's marathon. Doesn't sound like he did it. You know, competing in the two races and then scheduled to start. He received his Bachelor of Arts in Political Economy. I remember him somehow back then. Mm-hmm. I wonder if he dropped in on McLuhan in 65 from the University of Toronto and a Master of Arts in 68 from Chicago and a bunch of PhDs from York University. A documentary film about him entitled Runner was produced and directed by Don Owen. I think I saw that, narrated by the great poet W.H. Auden.
Wonderful.
And he's an older-looking guy right now.
Mm-hmm.
So, hey, everybody, let's get the... Ginny should be here to play her little children screaming thing. We get the yay from Ginny or anybody associated with Ginny.
You can do the yay.
I'd have to go into her scene, right? No, I actually don't do the yay. I'm not an advocate of it. It's a nice sound, but we're going to do something different. So everybody, you're all unmuted. You can speak. You can state your opinion of the story, what your views are. And Wheel says, you immediately post, Bob will probe the guest with his discarnate penis. Hey, Dobbs, what kind of perverse hazings do you have in store? Beautiful town, Lorraine, says Lisa. So I guess they're looking at your, what do you call it, your hometown?
Berkeley.
Yeah.
Berkeley.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks, Lisa.
Look at this. Hey, we got Callie is back here. Yes, a sex liberationist. Where are you, Callie? You're in the chat room. Ken is here. Jean is here now. Do you want to be phoned in, or what's the thing, Callie? You're here in the chat room. Are you in the phone zone? Let's see. Are you Maura? Hello, Maura. 760. Oh, is that you? Is that Callie?
Me too. Can you hear me, Bob?
Yes, I can hear you. Yeah.
No, it's Jermaine.
Oh, Jermaine's here. All right. Now, where's Callie? We want to include Callie.
Who's Callie?
Bob, she's the one you chased off an hour ago.
Yeah, she ran away an hour ago. I didn't respect her time, and we didn't know what. We were drunk. We were on junk and heroin. And then we got sobered up by Lorraine. And where is Callie, Bill?
Oh, she hung up.
She left
the
game.
That happened an hour ago.
She got mad. Those messages were from an hour ago?
Yeah, Gene. Yeah, Callie posted a couple times about the 8
Okay,
to
that's
10.
All right.
Yeah, and then, and I saw those, and then I broke in, told you about it, and she got ticked and left.
That's right. I said that, I won't say what I said. So here we have Jermaine. And
yeah,
Jermaine,
my sister.
Are your sisters with you in the same room, Jermaine?
Yeah, two of them. We couldn't get all four in one place. Sometimes it gets difficult to get all four of us together. But there's
right,
three
now,
of us.
Now, I don't think Carolyn, maybe Carolyn knows about this. We have Yila, architect and photographer. And we have Nadia, radio host. That's the Playboy channel. And Jermaine. Mm-hmm. Now, these three plus Kim, who represents
she's not
the...
here.
Beg your pardon?
Kim's the one that's missing.
Right.
Yeah, she's not here.
What does she do? What does Kim... She's the youngest?
Yeah, she's the youngest.
Figuring out her life.
She's figuring out her life right
she's
now.
She's a makeup artist / stylist.
Yeah.
Right.
Hair
she does makeup and she does her hair. Every time we go summer, she does my makeup, all of our makeup. But she's still trying to figure out her life, too.
Right. So Yila and Nadia, I know a lot about you from Jermaine. You're on the RNA drops, I think, the majority of you, right?
Yeah.
Yes. Now, I'm going to say something. I don't know if it's known. Well, it's known in the industry a bit. But the big surprise is you have the Kardashian sisters.
But
no, we're not up, them.
I know, but sneaking up on the Kardashian sisters are the Germain sisters or the Renner sisters. I don't know.
No, you know, they always, people always just say that there's so many of us, we remind them of the Kardashians, too. And they, people sometimes even call us the Kardashians, but we're not.
That's
we're the
right.
Renners.
No, this is going to be the antidote to the Kardashians. The Kardashians have taken the root of the DNA, but the Renners have taken the root of the RNA, which is the correct root.
Oh, that's a good one. I love that.
Yes, you could use it. It's politically correct. It's not racist, sexist, or anything. You just talk genetics for the 21st century. We have taken the RNA route, and this is pretty interesting. I've heard a lot of details. It's pretty exciting. Carolyn, did you hear me talk to Jermaine about some of these points?
You know,
yes, Jermaine.
Bob, yes. But you know, you can't say all these things that I've told you about. Something.
I know, it's a secret. I especially can't tell them what you told me about yourself. That's the scandalous part.
Oh, yeah, you can't say nothing about myself. You can't say nothing about myself.
Hila and Nadia, if you only knew what I knew about Jermaine, it's incredible what you're standing beside. But it must be kept.
Really?
Moment. Yes.
I tell them, but I don't know that sometimes they truly get
they
it.
Don't
Maybe
believe it.
Yeah, it's
don't believe
kind of
it.
Hard to do.
Right. And every one of them has created, they attract attention because everyone creates their unique professional career bubble, and they draw attention to each of their spheres, and they hang out with their mother, who is a archetype of costume design. Or is it, what is it she did?
She can make anything. Anything we come up with, she finds a way and she makes it. My sister Nadia makes butt pillows.
Right.
And my mom made them. They look so cool, so she can make anything.
It's a 3D butt pillow, so it's not just your regular pillow. It's an actual 3D, but I want to confirm that it is a pillow.
Excellent, excellent. So these girls, no, ladies, women, astral bodies, anthropomorphic, non-physicals, anybody got any suggestions? They are here, and you might be interested in what I'm talking about and ask a few questions. Anybody here? We got a whole bunch of people in the conference call. So,
oh, really?
Yeah, feel free
is
to
Carolyn
ask.
Carolyn there?
Yes, Carolyn's here. Say hello, Carolyn.
Hi, Carolyn.
Yeah, hi, Jermaine. Hi, ladies. Hi, sisters. I come from a family of four sisters, and I think it's so cool that the four of you actually get along and hang out together. I think that's fantastic.
I know. There's five of us, actually, but there's one more, but she lives in Costa Rica, so we're not that, we don't spend that much time with her. I don't think I've ever told you about, there's five.
No, is she older?
Yeah, she's older.
Well, I just had to move upstairs because I'm in the same room. You guys heard that echo from Carolyn, right? That's not just my perception. Right, so Lynn, Lorraine, and others here, these people are going to be important in Iandom, these sisters. And you guys might want to probe them any way you want and see what they how they respond. They're all celebrities. No, they're all media savvy. They're all savvy. You never know what they're going to say. And the Playboy hostess is going to watch out. Howard Stern, everybody look out. This woman's no fool. So come on, guys. Ask some questions or make some statements.
All right, start, Nadia.
Here, I'll break the ice, and I will let you know what I do on a regular basis.
I didn't mean you guys to make statements. I'm saying that the other callers here start probing this trio.
I know, Jermaine just told me to start talking.
It makes sense, though, that the Renners should introduce themselves. I mean, what are you going to ask? What size is your shoe?
What, I didn't do a good enough job?
No, you did not.
Oh, okay. I will back off. I will step down. Mm-hmm. Carolyn's in charge. She'll direct the production from this point on.
Okay.
So, yeah, just as you were going to do, introduce yourself and tell us about yourself so we can get to know you.
I will break the ice. I'm the youngest out of the three right now, right here, live with you all. I have a radio show for Playboy Radio in Spanish. I've been able to really advance my Spanish after speaking in Spanish for 4 hours Monday through Friday. My show is on SiriusXM, and we touch all the topics that you can think of that have to do with sexual relationships and relationships in general. A lot of things that in the Latin culture are considered taboo, those are the things that we love to talk, still in a classy way, still from the Playboy magazine perspective. And we try to make that come alive. And then we also bring in artists who we interview and try to ask them risky questions, questions that they will never get asked on regular radio. So that's kind of like the way I do as far as my everyday life. However, I do want to start doing TV, so that's going to come soon, and then you guys will probably be able to see me live somewhere in the world. And like Jermaine mentioned...
Hey, Nadia. Nadia,
yes.
Did you say Latin culture?
Yes.
Right. So you're the Howard, you know, the Harriet Stern of Latin, because you say Howard would say that he brings the questions that aren't allowed in mainstream radio. You're doing that in your world.
Absolutely, and it's the best type of interview you can ever have, because that's when you really have that interaction or that, it's just such a different interview. You really create like a different relationship with that artist or, I mean, whomever you're interviewing.
Right, because they know it's going to be intimate, so they're ready for it, and then they're prepared, and they might even prepare crazy responses ahead of time, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah.
And the ones that try not to reply to those fun questions, we kick them out of our show. There's no need for boring people in this world.
Ah, see, Carolyn? She's going to go far, Carolyn. Then to return, she will go far and then return with tears in her eyes and say, it was all a bunch of bullshit, it was the Matrix, and I'm going to become done.
What else? And like Jermaine mentioned, I have a pillow, a butt pillow that I'm developing. If you guys were to see me live, I have a nice thick butt, and
you do.
It's with a small waist. Let me clarify: small waist, big butt, just like a good Latin, just like
Kardashian.
Just kind of like Kim Kardashian, but the Latin version, and. And one day, I was hanging out with my boyfriend, and he was laying on my butt, and he said, wow, Nadia, your butt is very comfortable. From that idea, I said, well, you should get a pillow. The pillow might be more comfortable. And he's like, no, your booty is actually more comfortable than the pillow. So one day I woke up, and I told my mom, I have a great idea. I think you're going to think I'm crazy, but I think it's a fantastic idea. And I told my mom, can you create a 3D butt pillow where you take the measurements of my legs, my waist, and my hips, and make sure that the
your
belly
butt,
button
obviously.
Is in the right way, the right
place.
The same placement. And I have two little dimples in the back too. I make sure that this. I'm trying to explain so you guys can get a visual, since you guys can't really see. I can't show you my pillow. However,
yeah, where are the dimples?
The dimples are right behind my waist.
Ah,
yeah,
I know that. I know what that looks like. Carolyn has them.
You see, I mean, it's. I guess it's something that's very unique, but when I've said it, men say, I know exactly what you're talking about. They're not, like, on my butt. They're on
right.
the top, like,
right.
on the waist.
They're up on the waistband, below
yeah.
the belt.
Right.
Yeah.
So we even made sure that we put that detail in there because it's really just like my body shape. So my mom thought it was a great idea, and now we're
my
just...
mom always when we come with ideas, we're like, "Mom, let's make this." It's funny, she never says no. She's like, "Okay, okay, let's make a butt pillow."
In the regular household, there's no bad ideas.
She's the epitome of relax and allow. She's relax and allow. RNA.
Yeah, absolutely. It's like she almost doesn't care. She goes along with anything.
And when
right.
you have four amazing, crazy.
As long as it's not like murder.
Creative.
Oh my God! Remember, you want to talk about?
Remember when you murdered that guy? Yes, I do.
My mom.
Yeah.
Okay.
Wait.
We're gonna hold off that story because I want to make sure that everybody gets a turn to introduce themselves. So everybody understands what you guys are dealing with, because this might be either the most interesting conversation you guys are about to hear, or the most boring. I mean, I don't know. But
no, yeah,
we're gonna pass it on to Jermaine.
We'll tell you a story after of how my mom goes along with almost anything except
okay,
again
great.
Murder.
So that was Nadia talking.
Yeah.
Now comes Tila.
Gila.
Gila. Think of Gila like Gila Tequila.
Oh, that's usually like how you remember that name.
Okay. No. Gila. It's
Look
so
at Jermaine.
Good.
Jermaine can't even get a word in. And you're the oldest, right, Jermaine?
Yeah, I'm the oldest. Yeah.
Okay. You know, and Jermaine is well known in our scene. She was our radio fashion co-host. You know that, right?
I do. Yeah. I remember when she was putting her little demo together when she would edit her piece for the show.
Yeah, great. Because she used to do it at home?
No, no. I used to be at her house and she'll do it. And she's
she
like,
used to come over to my house a lot.
Yeah, and she'd be like, I need to do this for my radio show. And I thought it wasn't real up until
she
I really
it
heard it.
She thought it wasn't real. She said, she was like, what radio show? You're a good guy. And I was like, I swear, I go live and I talk about fashion and nobody would believe me. Nobody believes me, so I stopped telling people that I did it. And to this day, I don't think nobody knows.
No, I heard it. I tuned in once to make sure that she was in line. I'm like, I mean, really, a radio show? Like, why don't I have one? This is like a lot.
But now you have a radio show. Yeah. Wasn't it like 2010, Bob? Or 2011?
2010.
Yeah.
3 years ago.
Maybe into 2011.
Yeah. Somewhere around there. Okay,
well, the MTV Awards, that was 2010, right?
Yeah, that was 2010. Yeah.
Were any of your sisters in the seats there in the front row that you guys had?
No, it was just my friends and I.
Right, okay, I remember that. Okay, yeah. Gila, let's hear your story.
Hello. I don't know. I mean, I'm not a host, so I don't know if I'm going to be as interesting speaker as Navia. I study architecture, now I'm doing photography.
Did you take photography courses in college or whatever?
Yeah, that's what I'm doing right now.
Have you studied Man Ray?
Yes, I love him. I just took a picture of Nadia replicating one of his pictures.
Well, there
oh
you
God.
Go. See? Yes. Psychic. Dowsing. I'm a dowsing
it's so,
viewer.
It's so good, Bob. We have a Man Ray story, too. When she got operated, we kept on. She got some operation done, and I had to go with her, and she was, like, in pain. And we kept on saying, Man Ray, because we were like, just take your mind to somewhere else where you don't feel the pain. And she was, she was so into Man Ray at that time. So then
wow.
we got mind because every time we were, like, Man Ray was the time she was getting operated.
Yeah. And wow. I just... Funny, because I just shot Nadia last week. We did a whole photo shoot replicating one of his pictures.
We'll email it to you.
Yes. What do you think of that, Carolyn? What do you think of that?
Okay. Awesome.
Awesome. Okay. Awesomeosis. Okay. So you're an architect. And is there a training there? And did you go to school in architecture?
I also went to school and studied architecture, yep.
She's the one that stays in school for years and studies everything.
No, that's it.
She's the left hemisphere one. She's the left hemisphere one. You know, that tradition of left hemisphere is rational and right hemisphere is irrational. I mean, if you're doing architecture, I think that is left hemisphere activities. It's artistic. Yeah. You could slip over and left. So maybe you're all in the right hemisphere, but the Sheila would be closest to the left hemisphere, the logical, logical and a thinker.
Yep, I'm definitely a logical thinker.
That's why she's the smartest out of the crew here. That's why I keep her around.
We keep her around when we need to make logical decisions. I'm probably the worst at it. I don't even...
Absolutely.
I make no sense of nothing that I do, and I just do whatever, whenever, and I don't even think about it, so she's good balance.
And Jermaine is not lying about that.
Yeah, I'm not lying. I'm so bad at whatever. I don't know. Not bad,
I
good,
know.
Whatever.
Jermaine
Serves
is hard
well.
To hear. You know, Jermaine should quote Captain Beefheart, "I'm not really here, I just hang around for my friends."
Yeah, I do, for my sisters.
Yes, yeah, hang around for my mother and sisters, that's right. Okay, so you have this architectural background. Is there a favorite architect or inspired architect? I was in the Guggenheim or something several years ago, and there's this incredible female architect out of maybe Eastern Europe or Spain or something. She's famous. You know who I mean?
No.
I'll have to look her up and tell you about her.
Yeah.
She was amazing, famous woman architect. So, you should ask your professor. Are you finished school?
Like she's recent, a recent person, or?
No, what did you just say? Are you finished architecture school?
For now, I have, yeah.
Okay. Well, you could call your professor and see if he knows, if I can't find the name. But she's very avant-garde, incredible. You know, and a recognized architect, does the cities and whatever, in Germany or someplace.
Cool. And she's from Europe? Is she like
Yeah, she's European. I'm pretty sure it was a strange name. Maybe you could Google that, Carol. Put in world's famous female architect, something like that. It might be the key to unlock your talent if you look into her work.
Yeah.
If you don't already have it unlocked. So what else would you say, reticent one?
I don't know. I mean,
see,
it's a hard topic talking about yourself.
No, it's not
for me.
When your left hemisphere, that's right. But a right hemisphere has no fucking problem to talk about themselves.
Not for me. Bob, remember you said when I told you one time to try, when I date guys, try not to talk about myself and listen to them?
Yeah.
I have no problem talking about myself.
That's your main talking.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But what about Nadia? Does Nadia talk a lot?
Yeah.
Yeah. More than all of them.
Okay. How about Kim?
She's a little more quiet, but she wants to say something.
She won't stop.
It's usually kind of funny. Like, she has those good one-liners.
Right. So you got Kim and Gila on one side, and Jermaine and Nadia on the other side. That's the
yeah. Well, Jermaine has to get comfortable though.
Yeah.
In the beginning, she looks like a snotty
yes.
Do
you know, girls or ladies, that is one of the first things Ion said about her in her private session.
Yeah.
Ion picked up on that immediately.
He said that. Yeah.
What did he say?
He said that the men, you know, she's very attracted, or men are, what's it, attracted to you, or you attract men, but she will have nothing to do with any of them. That's what I had said.
That's funny.
You remember that, Jermaine?
I do. I always come across like I'm just don't want to be bothered or like snotty, but I'm fun, I think, sometimes.
There's a lot of friends that she's met, and when she first meets them, like, everybody kind of doesn't want to talk to her because they think she's just snotty, like, conceited. So then it takes a while for her to warm up, and then they're like, oh my god, Jermaine's actually pretty cool.
Yeah, that's what everybody, oh my god, she's actually pretty cool, she's fun. But at first I don't look fun, I look like I don't know.
I know, and she's been taking therapy for me, and there's going to be a change in that level. Right, Jermaine? Are we talking about that? We don't go into that, right?
What, therapy?
Yes,
I think everybody needs therapy.
I read your, you know what the therapy is? I read your email.
Oh, yeah, you're my therapist.
And I
the world's
short...
not ready yet, not ready. So maybe soon.
That's right. And I give short, precise answers like, awesome, great, you're fucking amazing. You know, that's my therapy. No, that's pretty neat. So, yes, Jermaine, so now you want to tell some more stories?
Oh, well, everybody knows Jermaine, right?
Yeah. Well, everybody knows I'm a designer. I make stuff, and
you don't make stuff.
I'm a designer. I make stuff.
See,
come on, get off your pedestal. Talk to it. You go, I'm a designer. I make stuff, and I'm out of here. You know, please drop the snob naturalness to yourself and tell us about the situation. What are you making?
Right now I'm creating like three different things, just always clothes and, yeah, just clothes for all different projects. That's my life. Always thinking.
Yeah, Nadia. See how reserved she is, Nadia? She won't say much at first, you know? And it's not, well, she is conceited, but it's not really that. First layer it is. But aren't you proud of her designs, Nadia and Tila?
Yeah, absolutely.
She's a great, talented designer that took a while to finally open herself to become and explore and be by herself on her own. But I think this is just the beginning of where she's starting.
Yes.
So I can't wait for the upcoming stuff, because I really truly feel like with anything that we do sometimes, especially with people that are creative like Jermaine and Gila, where sometimes they're not really sure of their products or their creative side, and they need reassurance every time. But I think that Jermaine's finally to a point where she truly believes in herself more than everybody else to open this creative box and start with her Huskas, and I think that this is just the beginning to the next levels.
Yeah, no, Jermaine is a, since I know her more than you two, I can say she's a person of destiny. She's a person of destiny. Jermaine's going to be important in some way, at least in her own mind.
Definitely. But definitely in my own mind. I'm already a god.
That's right.
Believe it.
We've got some people here. Come on in and interview them and provoke some other stories from them, whoever's here with us.
So we'll keep going with our stories. You want to tell that story that you were going to tell?
What the hell? Nobody here, Carolyn? Check the website.
Hi.
What's going on?
Hi.
Oh, okay. Who's this?
This is Wendy.
Yes, Wendy. It's a Calgary. She's from Calgary. She was rained out this summer, but she kept her cool. She's in a good sunny disposition. Have at them, Wendy.
Well, I have four sisters, too, so I know the good, juicy stories that we have. So I'll give you an example, and then you guys tell me if you have anything like that or similar. One of my sisters is only a year and a half age difference, and we ended up accidentally dating the same guy. And we found out just before he arrived to pick us up. And we didn't know that he was standing at the door, and it was a bright sunny day, and the screen door was, you know, there, so you couldn't really see beyond.
Yeah.
And my stepmother was standing there, it was in the kitchen, stirring a pot, and my sister and I just found out. And we started a rip-roaring fight to the point of tearing each other's clothes off and yelling
wow.
and screaming, "I saw him first, he's mine!"
And oh, wow.
We heard that at the door, and my stepmother looked and was so humiliated by us that she dropped the spoon and ran out of the room. So anyway, do you guys have
any... What? Did I miss that? She what and ran out of the room?
Dropped her spoon. She was standing at the stove stirring her pot, and she was embarrassed by us.
Because the guy could hear what was going on.
Yes, and he finally coughed and went. We were fighting so loud.
That's funny. That's such a great story.
We have a rule, though. That's the only rule we have, that we don't come anywhere near a guy. But we have such different tastes that I don't think it would happen anyways.
Yeah, but wait a minute. Let's not cut Wendy off. So you guys are fighting. Was this the first date?
No, it was a couple dates into it, and he was a real scoundrel, because we also would never have purposely done that, and he was just a real cad playing us. So then
he dated one and then dated the other and didn't tell the first, and he was real sneaky. That's pretty interesting.
Yeah.
Did he know
and
you
then
were sisters?
He knew. No, he was just, you know, he was just a pretty boy having fun. But we ended up then, when we saw him, we both walked out and said, "Well, I don't want him either. You can have him."
Really?
So Yes, I was just wondering, although she did sneak out with him later. But so I was wondering what kind of crazy tales could you guys tell? Something like that. Or not like that, but, you know, sisters.
Yeah, did you get your wires crossed accidentally?
Well, let me see. Not any guys, because we have